When somebody's looking unhealthy, we say, Nana Katwitsa Hindi, go to your land. We say that because we know that the land will heal you.
Alaskans testify about whether to drill in Anwar at a Senate hearing in Washington. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, November 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, after a drawn-out battle, Alaska Airlines pilots get a pay hike.
They really force us into this arbitration, and it's very disappointing that it had to go that far.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. Speak to your financial advisor or contact us to learn more. Thank you.
Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
In Congress, the spotlight was on the Republican tax proposal unveiled today in the House. The Senate version isn't out yet, but the bill is expected to include drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. 11 Alaskans testified before the Senate Energy Committee today for drilling and against. While senators said they wanted to hear from the people of the Arctic, Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin says many seemed to listen selectively.
Sam Alexander from Fort Yukon in Fairbanks cuts a striking figure in a congressional hearing, and not just because of his moose hide vest.
Like many Gwich'in, I served in the U.S. military. As a Green Beret, I deployed to Iraq to free the oppressed. Little did I realize that I'd come home to find my own people's freedom under attack.
Alexander says drilling in the refuge would threaten the porcupine caribou herd, the animals his people depend on. He spoke like someone from very, very far beyond the Beltway.
When somebody's looking unhealthy, we say, Nana Katwitsa Hindi, go to your land. We say that because we know that the land will heal you. The land is essential to our way of life. It provides us sustenance, and we view it as sacred. The caribou come from a place we call Ijikwatsan Kwantai Kotlit, the sacred place where life begins.
And that caribou birthplace? It's none other than the coastal plain of the refuge, the so-called 1002 area, the swath within Anwar that Congress may open up to oil drilling. Senator Martin Heinrich, a Democrat and elk hunter from New Mexico, was enthralled by Alexander.
In listening to everyone here today, what really struck me was the way you talked about this place.
Heinrich was turned off by others who called the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge by its acronym.
Anwar, to me, sounds like a Middle Eastern country covered in sand where we should just develop lots of oil and gas. They don't talk about a refuge. And you said, this is the sacred place where life begins. Can you talk a little bit more about how your people talk about this place?
Alexander obliged. Next to Alexander at the witness table was Matthew Rexford, a leader from Kaktovik. That village is actually on the coastal plain within the 1002 area. Rexford says oil means jobs and a better standard of living for his people. He says his community also depends on subsistence hunting and the richness of the refuge.
Another of those natural resources is oil and gas, and lots of it. We rely on the bounty of the land and find sustenance within Anwar.
Senator Heinrich did not ask him to elaborate. And so it went. Witnesses discussed caribou populations and whether modern drilling techniques would or wouldn't harm them. Then senators, for the most part, asked friendly questions of whichever Alaskan represented the view they held on drilling when they walked into the hearing room. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington State is the top Democrat on the Energy Committee. She complained about the makeup of the witness list. She said she wanted to hear more from Indian country, not just from leaders of the for-profit Native corporations.
Individual tribal members, as we have seen throughout Alaska and throughout the United States of America, don't support this kind of development because they believe in the wildlife nature that God has given us and that we are stewards of Mother Earth. So I thank them for that. I thank them for their strong spiritual beliefs. Haishka, thank you.
That ignited a slow burn in Richard Glenn, one of the pro-drilling witnesses. He's a vice president of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation and a geologist. But Glenn is also a tribal member, and he said it seemed like Cantwell only wanted to listen to certain Native perspectives.
That's looking for your own opinion and trying to find people to match it.
Glenn says he could have spoken his mother tongue at the hearing, but considered it disrespectful in that context.
We speak our language to each other. It's beautiful language. It's appropriate. It's sometimes a lot more efficient than the English language. And to come here and just spout a few lines in front of them to somehow enhance my own legitimacy seemed like an unfair use of our gift.
The Energy Committee is supposed to vote on an ANWR bill by mid-November. Senator Lisa Murkowski, chair of the Energy Committee, says she has no doubt the legislation can raise $1 billion for the federal treasury over the next decade, as required by the budget Congress passed last month. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
As Alaska lawmakers weigh requiring more jail time for offenders, they're scrambling to understand the costs of a legislative tweak to last year's criminal justice overhaul. The House Finance Committee may vote as soon as tonight on Senate Bill 54. The bill would scale back some of the reductions in sentences that were made last year in the law known as SB 91. Department of Corrections officials estimate the new bill could cost between $1.5 million and just over $4 million. Homer Republican Representative Paul Seaton says he'd like to see a more precise estimate. He notes that the department will submit a budget on December 15th.
If we're throwing a dart at a dartboard and saying a number, I mean, I presume on December 15th you're not going to say, we want some money, but we can't tell you how much.
Corrections Commissioner Dean Williams says much was unknown in estimating the costs. The new costs are much less than the savings from SB 91. That law is expected to save the state government $380 million in the next decade. A little more than half of the savings would be from paying for fewer prisoners, while the rest of the savings would come from avoiding the expense of another prison or sending prisoners out of state. One unknown factor is whether amendments to SB 54 would increase prisoners and force the state to reopen the Palmer Correctional Center. Corrections officials say the number could be high enough that the state would have to consider building a new prison or sending prisoners out of state again. Williams says the state's prisons are already at 91% capacity, and he says that number is low.
When you have 40 men in a gymnasium, or 50 men in a gymnasium, it's supposed to be used for a gymnasium, and that's considered part of the standard housing, which is what the case is in Fairbanks, I think we have a problem.
North Pole Republican Representative Tammy Wilson told the committee co-chairs that she wants more information before the committee finishes its work on the bill.
I'm hearing that we're not going to have an accurate number, so I don't know how you want to handle that, but I don't think it's fair to the committee because we're the Finance Committee. It is about the numbers and how we're going to come up with the money.
The committee voted on amendments to the bill today. The House floor debate on the bill could occur this weekend. Alaska Airlines pilots are getting a significant boost in pay. Since acquiring Virgin America last year, Alaska has established itself as the fifth largest air carrier in the country. But pilots from both companies felt they were underpaid compared to their peers from other airlines. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, an arbitration panel ruled Tuesday to increase the pilots' wages.
The average pay increase for Alaska Airlines captains was 16%, and the average for Virgin America captains was 29%. First officers from both airlines saw increases of 28 and 45% respectively. David Campbell is a pilot and spokesman for the Airline Pilots Association, the union that represents the pilots. He says the large increases are a sign of how low the previous wages were.
The increase in wages is a good example of how far we were from our peers at other airlines. And this negotiation was really about bringing us into parity with our peers across the industry. And this arbitration ruling failed to do that. So we're disappointed.
In a press release from the union, Captain Chris Notaro expressed disappointment that while these pay increases are significant under most circumstances, pilots with Alaska Airlines are still paid less than their contemporaries at other airlines. The agreement came in the form of a ruling from an arbitration panel. The panel ruled that while Alaska Airlines operates the fifth largest air carrier in the country, the volume of business they conduct is dwarfed by the larger carriers, such as Delta, United, and American. Their larger revenues and operations allow for their pilots to have higher salaries. Campbell says the arbitration process that began in late August was a last resort for the pilots, used to get what they considered to be fairer wages.
We were in direct negotiations and didn't make any progress there. We didn't make any progress in mediated discussions, and they really forced us into this arbitration, and it's very disappointing that it had to go that far.
Alaska Airlines declined to do a recorded interview on the topic. They released a statement saying, quote, "We respect the decision of the arbitrators and the process they went through." They emphasized, quote, "Our commitment is to keep our company strong with low costs, low fares, and great experience for our guests while paying competitively." Both Alaska Airlines and former Virgin America pilots are under the same contract now, effective November 1st of this year. The contract also contains minor increases to some retirement benefits. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, University of Alaska Fairbanks officials address equity in hiring.
We used to have kind of a diversity briefing before any search for faculty or administrators. And I think in recent years, we haven't been doing that.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Alaska's health insurance premiums are going down for 2018. If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. For local assistance, call 1-844-PLANS-AK. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
President Donald Trump is headed to China next week. Alaska's governor and the man tasked with landing a deal to build the state's ambitious gas pipeline project will be along for the ride. Governor Bill Walker and Keith Meyer are headed to Beijing with the president as part of a larger group of corporate leaders and members of the private sector. Walker wouldn't say if he planned to announce any deals with potential partners for Alaska's $45 billion LNG project, but it is a goal for his trip to make a deal.
You know, it's too soon to say. I will actually be in China a couple of days before the president arrives into Beijing, and so we'll see what happens in these final few days.
He also had no details on meetings scheduled with potential customers. Alaska Gasline Development Corporation spokesperson Rosetta Alcantara says she doesn't have any information about Beatings or Myers travel arrangements. Walker did say that he sees this as the most significant opportunity Alaska has had to engage with the market on Alaska's project. He says it aligns with the Trump administration's goals of working with China on trade and energy policy.
It's a good fit from a number of reasons. One is that it's about a $10 billion a year offset on the balance of trade issue, and also what it does on the air quality, air emission, natural gas versus some of the other fuels that they use in those areas.
Walker will fly with President Trump to Hawaii on Friday for a meeting with four other governors on Pacific issues. Then he'll head to Beijing on Saturday. The University of Alaska Fairbanks is taking action to address workforce diversity and equity issues. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the move is prompted by employees.
The measures laid out this week by University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor Dan White come in response to a letter from six female researchers at UAF and backed by over 200 petition signers. The letter to both UAF and statewide administrators recommends steps to address unequal pay, bias in hiring, and other challenges faced by women and other underrepresented groups at UAF. White says the letter is given focus to efforts already underway at the university.
I applaud the work of this group of authors and the people that signed on to this because it brought a lot of the issues kind of to the forefront.
White cites one example of a step being taken to increase diversity in hiring.
We used to have kind of a diversity briefing before any search for faculty or administrators. And I think in recent years, we haven't been doing that. So, you know, this is one of the issues that was brought up by the letter and its authors. And, you know, that's an easy one to fix.
White points to other equally important avenues to be investigated and developed by a new chancellor's task force.
To take the issues that were laid out in the letter as the first set of issues, but to look more broadly at diversity and equity.
I'm really excited that the current administration wants to work on these issues.
Lily Cohen is one of the six women who authored the letter that prompted the task force and other actions. Cohen, a research professional at UAF's International Arctic Research Center, says the letter was inspired by frustration with what they see at the university.
Right now, the top 1% of people employed at the University of Alaska Fairbanks are 28 people, and 3 of those are women, which is the same thing as saying that $4.5 million goes to men and $500,000 goes to women. And so when I see numbers like that, I know that there's something wrong.
Cohen emphasizes that they are not looking for mandated representation, but a system that fairly assesses all candidates.
You have to look at who is writing the qualifications, because maybe a certain candidate has really amazing qualifications. They just aren't listed as the things that the university is looking for. And then also, whenever you're judging someone's qualification, everyone comes in with implicit bias or ways of seeing the world that in a way that other people don't see them.
Both Cohen and Chancellor White underscore that the current effort builds on past and ongoing work at the university, which already has a committee on the status of women and diversity, as well as an inclusion task force that's addressing gender issues. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Revenue from legal marijuana sales in the Matanuska-Susitna borough has steadily grown since the first pot shops opened there in March. And so, too, has the associated tax revenue flowing into Matsu borough coffers. According to the borough's latest marijuana tax numbers, the new industry has hauled in a total of more than $3.3 million in revenue through the end of September. That's generated about $151,000 in taxes for the borough. It's still just a drop in the bucket compared to the tens of millions of dollars the borough generates in tax revenue annually. But Developmental Services Manager Alex Strawn, who oversees permitting and enforcement for marijuana cultivators and retailers, says the money is welcome.
Yeah, surely. I don't think that we're relying on this to fund the borough. But certainly any little bit that we can get is good.
The borough's figures show dollars from marijuana sales nearly tripled from the second quarter of 2017 to the third quarter. It's unclear if that growth rate will continue because, as Strawn says, the borough started with no legal marijuana sales, so the rapid increase is almost entirely due to the first few pot stores opening up over that time period.
There's just a lot of unknowns here. We really did not know what to expect. We have not had a really good idea of how much money is going to be generated in taxes. So we're kind of just seeing how this all unfolds.
Strawn credits state regulators with setting clear guidelines and says he appreciates their diligence in learning from other states' mistakes. Still, he says there is some uncertainty among marijuana business owners in terms of what actions might be taken in the future by the federal government, which still considers marijuana illegal. What enforcement measures may come under the Trump administration, if any, remain to be seen.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com. The University of Alaska's founders knew that to build a great state, we would need a great university. Today, UA offers more than 400 degrees and certificates with campuses from Kotzebue to Ketchikan. They are leaders in Arctic and Alaska research and dedicated to direct hands-on teaching, whether online, in the classroom, or in the field. Greatness awaits you. See how the University of Alaska can help you achieve at alaska.edu/start here. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Love what you hear on this station? Consider becoming a member.
A federal lawsuit brought by the cruise ship industry against the city and borough of Juneau says its passenger head tax is unconstitutional. If the industry prevails, it could have implications on the statewide passenger fee. KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports.
After a year and a half of litigation and nearly $500,000 spent by the city in legal costs, the two sides are no closer to a resolution.
We don't dispute the collection of the fees. Don't dispute those at all. It's just the expenditures.
That's John Binkley, president of CLIA Alaska, the industry group suing the city over how it spends the $8 per passenger it collects. He says the passenger and port development fees are required by federal law to support cruise ship operations, not fund local vanity projects.
And the city disagrees, and they say the money can be spent on things like the artificial island it built, the whale park, the airport, or pretty much anything else at once.
Juneau's city attorney, Amy Mead, argues that the industry reads the law too narrowly. One example is seasonal crossing guards near the cruise docks. The city uses passenger fees to pay for them.
You know, we have 1 million people getting off the ships in the summer. We think crossing guards provide a service to the passengers because it enhances their safety, and CLIA would disagree with that.
But Binkley says his industry's position is these fees are for port infrastructure, like a dock.
Any of that money collected must be spent on a service to the ship because it's a fee on the ship.
Actually, it's a fee on the passenger that's paid by the passenger. But that's the gist of the dispute. In filings last week, the cruise industry upped the ante. It asserts Juneau's passenger fees are unconstitutional. It points to the Commerce Clause and Tonnage Clause, both of which give Congress the sole authority to regulate interstate commerce. Mead says that shows the industry is seeking a ruling with a wider precedent.
So if it were just a Juneau case, their motion would be tied to very specific expenditures, and this case would all be about very specific expenditures. And that is not how CLIA has fashioned this lawsuit. They challenge the constitutionality of the fees.
There's history here. The cruise industry opposed past citizen-led referendums in Juneau and statewide that created the head taxes. An industry lawsuit against the state's head tax was settled in 2010 after the legislature slashed the passenger fee by 25%. That seemed to settle the issue, but state lawyers are still watching the Juneau case with interest. Assistant Attorney General Chris Peloso notes that Juneau's local law closely mirrors the state law. So precedent matters.
By challenging the underlying constitutionality of a tax on cruise ship passengers, victory by CLIA would establish a precedent, and that precedent could be useful in a future challenge against similar taxes levied by other municipalities, you know, like Ketchikan, or a challenge against the state commercial passenger vessel excise tax.
In other words, it could open the floodgates to fresh challenges. The cruise industry insists that's not its aim. If the judge overturns Juneau's passenger fees, Binkley says the industry would continue to pay the full amount to the state. And he says more funding might be available for other Southeast ports of call.
The resources we feel are being not properly spent in Juneau when they should be spent on port infrastructure in other smaller communities.
So far, the Attorney General's office hasn't gotten involved. But if the cruise industry's lawsuit challenges the state's passenger fee, Peloso said the state would naturally intervene. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
This time of year, ice skating enthusiasts start dreaming about getting out for a spin on Alaska lakes. But even in the same area, lakes can freeze at different times. That prompted 9-year-old Liam Cleary from Anchorage to ask, why do some lakes freeze faster than others? Brian Brettschneider with our Ask a Climatologist segment is an avid skater and has thought a lot about this question. He told editor Annie Feit, several factors determine when lakes freeze.
The big thing is the amount of water in the lake. How deep is the lake? Because the lake is accumulating warmth the entire summer long. And so, you know, by the time we hit, say, the 1st of September, the lake temperature is 50, 52, 54 degrees. And as the air cools down, all that warmth that's accumulated has to be released. And if you've got a lake that's 20 feet deep versus a lake that's 10 feet deep, it's got twice as much water in it. So it's just going to take a lot longer for that heat to be released.
And are there other factors?
There are. So, for example, the exposure. If a lake is completely encircled by trees, our low sun angle would mean the sun's not going to hit it at all. So during the daytime, if a little bit of ice forms at night, that ice is going to survive during the daytime versus one that has full sun exposure. It's going to melt a little bit during the day. The other key thing is whether or not there's any new water coming into the lake. So some lakes are just kind of a bowl depression. Others have like a stream coming in on one side and then a stream going out in the other. Streams are carrying cooler water. They're not accumulating heat. They're always moving. And so if you're bringing in water from a stream, that's actually kind of keeping that lake water a little cooler. So it's going to freeze a little faster in the fall.
How do lakes freeze? Do they freeze from the top down or from the bottom up?
Well, most of us visualize a cup of ice water, right? And that's the ice is at the top. So ice is less dense. But during the summer, the temperature as you go down the lake, it actually gets cooler as you go down. But in the fall, once you hit about 38 degrees, the density flips in a lake and it actually gets warmer as you go down. And so once it does, then you can kind of get a rapid freeze over, even with not as cold temperatures.
And you've done measurements on your neighborhood lake over the last how many years?
About the last 4 years. About every 5 or 7 days, I'll just go out there with a little drill and I'll drill a hole and stick a tape measure in it. And you can see that progression of how the temperatures and the snow cover influence the amount of cold that goes into the lakes.
So have you learned anything?
So I have learned. So I originally expected that the deeper parts of the lake would freeze later and the shallower parts would freeze sooner. But there is this kind of circulation, even in an enclosed bowl, due to the density, where the water kind of mixes together. And so it actually, when it does freeze up, it kind of all flash freezes over at once.
Brian Brettschneider is a climatologist in Anchorage. He checks in with Alaska's Energy Desk each week as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. Thanks to Liam Cleary for our question this week. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman, Jacob Resnick, and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Casey Grove, Wesley Early, and Annie Fite in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
And by
GCI Business, with complete GCI data solutions for Alaska's most important organizations. GCI is your partner in possibilities. Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC. Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.